Okay, good morning, everyone. So I also take the opportunity, being that this is our last shiur together for the semester, to thank Mrs. Shulman and the rest of the Hanhala at WIT for putting together, you know, again, certainly all of us were thrown for an incredible loop over the last couple of months. And it's been beautiful to see that, Baruch Hashem, the one constant has been our ability to learn and our ability to spiritually grow and our ability to continue to search forward in our ruchnius, even in these most tumultuous and difficult of times. So thank you to Mrs. Shulman, to everyone who made that happen. And thank you, of course, to all of the sponsors. Thank you to all of you. It's been an incredible school. It's hard to believe that it's already the middle of June and that our semester is coming to an end. You know, it's time has taken on a different dimension over the course of these last number of weeks, and we're into the summer already. So thank you again for allowing me to extend by 1 week so we could bring to a close Parak Ches. So with that, let's begin. So remember again, over the last 2 weeks, we focused on different themes in Parak Ches. In our first shiur 2 weeks ago, we spoke about we really focused on Pasuk Hey of Ma Enosh Kisis Garenu. What is man? What is man that he should be remembered? We focused on the fascinating story of Moshe Rabbeinu receiving the Torah at Har Sinai, the incredible debate and dispute that took place between Moshe and the Malachim. In last week's shiur, we focused on Pasuk Zayin, Tamshilenu b'ma'aseh yadecha, that Hashem has given us dominion over the work of His hands. We spoke about again, what exactly is it in life that we have control over? We spoke about the ability for us to control our identity, our ruchnius, our neshama. So for this last shiur on Parak Ches, and this last shiur for our semester, I want to bring you back to the beginning of this kapitel. Pasuk Aleph, which I underlined in the sheet over here, Lav Natseach Al Hagitis Mizmor LeDavid. So remember again, there are many parts of this pasuk that we recognize. So Lam Natseach, we translate as to the conductor. So as we've spoken about many times throughout our journey in Sefer Tehillim, David HaMelech wanted more than anything to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. But for a variety of reasons, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that he was not to have that privilege. So David did the next best thing. Number one, he bought the real estate. He bought the Aaron Harabayis that would ultimately become the Beis HaMikdash. He bought it from Aravna HaYevusi. It was a threshing floor. Even though he knew that he could not build the structure, he could at least purchase the real estate. And the other thing he did is he wrote the musical compositions which would be sung by the Levitic choir in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what he did. And so whenever you see Lam Natseach, whenever you see to the conductor is the head of the Levitic choir. David HaMelech wrote this kapitel to be sung by the Levim. Silence Lam Natseach. Mizmor LeDavid, I also understand, right? Remember again, Mizmor LeDavid means that David HaMelech wrote this particular kapitel while in a state of divine inspiration. Sometimes it's LeDavid Mizmor, sometimes it's Mizmor LeDavid. When it's LeDavid Mizmor, David had to self-inspire. When it's Mizmor LeDavid, David felt that he was inspired from above. But the one word, of course, in this pasuk that seems to defy comprehension is the word Al-Hagitis. What is Gitis? So this, interestingly enough, the Mefarshim go in a variety of different directions. If you look at number two, the Radak says, V'yish omrim, ki kishahaya David begat chibro v'amro. David HaMelech, remember again, spent a significant amount of time running away from his father-in-law, from Shaul. Because remember again, to say that it was a tumultuous relationship would be an understatement. I had plenty of people spend their lives running away from their in-laws. But this was something different, right? David HaMelech, again, was in mortal danger. His father-in-law wanted to kill him. Again, that's not like a metaphor. It's not a euphemism. It's quite literal. So one of the places where David HaMelech sought refuge was in the city of Gat. So the Radak says, L'Natzeach Alagitis, David HaMelech wrote this particular kapitel while situated or while hiding out in the city of Gat. Rashi number two says, number three, Alagitis, Klizemer Shabamigat. Others, so Rashi says no. Rashi explains that Gitis is actually a type of musical instrument. Now the truth is, we find this in other places in Tehillim as well. Sorry. Where David HaMelech not only says that this particular kapitel is to be sung in the Beis HaMikdash, but he also tells us what type of musical instrument to use, that the Levim should use. So Rashi says over here that Gitis is actually the name of an instrument. Lam Natseach al Hagitis is an instrument. Now, why is it called Gittis? Apparently, this particular instrument is made in the city of Gat. So again, according to the Radak and Rashi, the city, the geographic location, the city of Gat, has a strong connection to this capital. According to the Radak, it's because David HaMelech wrote this capital in Gat. According to Rashi, it's because he used a musical instrument, he told the Levim to use a particular musical instrument which was fashioned in the city of Gat. The Medrash, number 4, says something a little bit different. Davar Acher, Lamnatzeach al Hagitis, al Paranos Gog Umagog, the Arba Malchios Shendarchim Begat. Sorry, excuse me for 1 second. Rachata Adonai, the Hinu Malach Olam, Shakoni Ebedvaro. The Medrash says over here, the interesting enough, Alagitis, the Medrash says, refers to the Paranios, the difficulties, tribulations, trials, and travails that will be experienced during the war of Gog Umagog. Now remember again, Gog Umagog, without getting too esoteric over here, represents the ultimate battle between good and evil that precedes the Messianic era. Before Mashiach comes, there's going to be some great war of Gog Umagog, where the forces of good and evil will have one final showdown. So the Medrash says over here that this capital is somehow related to that war of Gog Umagog, because what happens in the war of Gog Umagog? Shudarcham kegat. Humanity is pressed like a vat, meaning, if we look at the etymological root of the word gat, gat means oppress. Not oppress, not O-P-P-R, right? A press, a wine press. A gat is a wine press. You take grapes there, you crush the grapes, and you make wine. So the Medrash says over here, Lamnatzeach al Hagitis. This is referring to a time when humanity is going to be pressed. Pressed like in a wine press. When is humanity going to be pressed as if in a wine press? By the war of Gog Umagog. The problem with this explanation is, as Rashi says, Ach in number 5, Ach inyan hamizmar eino mochiach. Topically, the context or the rest of the subject of the verse does not really seem to speak to that, right? In other words, the nature of the kapitel, we've already seen this. We see other chapters of Tehillim that speak about suffering. We see chapters of Tehillim that speak about oppression, that speak about difficulties, that speak about challenge. That doesn't really seem to be the topic of this particular kapitel. So as the Medrash seems to understand that Lamnatzeach al Hagitis is Darul speaking about the oppression, when we are pressed like as if grapes in a wine press by the war of Gog Umagog, by the battle between good and evil, Rashi says that doesn't really seem to be the topic of this kapitel. But I'll show you something fascinating. If you take a look at number 6, Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch says as follows. He picks up on this idea and he says like this. He said the word gat, the wine press, is used, he quotes in Eicha and Yeshaya, as an allegorical expression for the grievous catastrophes which God has visited upon the nations. This figure of speech, however, indicates that what is meant is only apparent destruction, while in reality, the painful bruising pressure, such as occurs during the wine pressing operation, does not destroy, but only brings out the fine and noble essence that was locked within the crushed grape. So this is incredible. Rav Hirsch says that while it's true, gat, right, the press, often refers to suffering. Suffering, when a person suffers, so they feel pressed, they feel oppressed, they feel crushed. But Rav Shlomo Rav Hirsch says something amazing. He says, you know, if you walk into a wine press and you see them making wine, and let's say you have no idea what's happening over here, you have no idea about the wine process, you walk in and what do you see? You see the winemaker, right? You see the individual working in the press, taking out beautiful barrels of grapes, buckets of grapes, baskets, whatever it is. And suddenly what happens? They start smashing the grapes. And if you were to see this, you would say, oy vavoy, Why are you doing such a thing like this? Why the wanton destruction? Why the needless destruction of the grapes? Why are you doing this? The grapes are so beautiful. They're so delicious. They provide sustenance. And here you're going ahead and you're stomping on them and you're smashing them. And for what? For what? What purpose? But of course, says Rav Hirsch, that's because the person doesn't understand that although the grapes are beautiful and although the grapes are sustaining, what you get from crushing the grapes is so much greater than the grape itself. You know, the fascinating thing about wine is wine, right? The grape itself is ha'itz, and yet that which comes from the wine has a unique bracha, a bracha that is not shared by anything else. Only two things are like that, bread and wine, both because they sustain in different ways. So says Rosh Hashanah for Hirsch something amazing. Gat in a press is where you take something and pretty much you destroy it. You destroy it. But lest you think that when you destroy it, the item is obliterated and no longer, in fact, something different occurs. The original item is destroyed, but that which comes out is so much more beautiful, is so much more meaningful, has such a greater elevated status. As such, says Rav Hirsch, something amazing. Thus, the superscription of Alagitis upon the wine pressing would characterize the content of a psalm as a meditation upon the ennobling effect of those afflictions decreed by God for the moral betterment of mankind, or the ennobling of man brought about by the Lord by means of such suffering. So Rav Hirsch says something really amazing. Rav Hirsch explains that Lamnatzeach al Hagitis Mizmor LeDavid is David HaMelech talking about the trials and tribulations of life, but with a different perspective. You see, a lot of times throughout Tehillim, when David HaMelech speaks about suffering, and which he does throughout much of Tehillim, because David HaMelech had an exceptionally difficult life. But often when David HaMelech speaks about suffering, the theme is normally like this. Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'm suffering. And I see no end to my suffering. And I see no light at the end of the tunnel. Very often David HaMelech's initial kind of beginnings of Tehillim are very, sometimes they even seem a little bit hopeless and a little bit helpless, but then David HaMelech regains his composure, and what happens? He says, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I know that you are with me. I know that you are always by my side. I know that you never forsake me. See, even when things look hopeless and overwhelming, and I feel alone, I gather myself together, I take a deep breath, and I realize I am never alone. And because you never leave my side, I know that somehow, some way, everything is going to be all right. That what I just told you is probably 93% of Sefer Tehillim. 93% of Sefer Tehillim is David HaMelech saying, I'm in a bad spot in life. I'm in a bad situation. And I feel hopeless, and I feel helpless, and I'm ready to throw in the towel. I don't understand life. I don't understand people. And God, frankly, I don't even understand you. So David HaMelech vents, he voices his frustrations, he voices his difficulties, then he takes a deep breath and he says, but I believe everything is going to be okay. Why? Because even when I feel forsaken, I know I'm never forsaken. Even when I feel alone, I know that I'm never really alone. Even when I feel that you have left my side, I know that in fact I am locked in your embrace. This is a little bit different. Rav Hirsch posits that what David HaMelech is saying over here is he's beginning the kapitel, Lamnatzeach, conductor, Levitic choir, I want you to sing about the following. Al Hagitis Mizmor LeDavid. I want you to sing about suffering. Sing about suffering? How can you sing about suffering? Because David HaMelech says, do you know what the incredible part about suffering is? Suffering is like a wine press. Suffering, and by the way, the metaphor is very profound. Suffering is like a wine press. What happens to the wine press? So think about this for just a moment. The grape, what was the grape doing? The poor innocent grape was minding its own business, was just going ahead and sitting on the vine, taking in the sun. Life is good. Everything is great. Then what happens? Someone plucks the grape from the vine. Okay, still puts it in the basket. The basket is nice. The basket is warm. The grapes chaverim, right? It's like the chevra is there. Everybody's together. Fantastic. Fine. Life is still all right. OK, Okay, we get to the press, new surroundings, okay. Then what happens? The grapes put on the floor of the press, and some guy starts stomping on the grapes. Or some press is put down on the grapes. And there's so much pressure that is put on the grapes that what happens? The grapes burst. And they think it's over. It's done. But instead, not only is it over, but the grape has just become something even better than it could have ever imagined. That grape just became wine. And you know, again, wine, there's nothing more chashev in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, than wine. Remember again, there's nothing we do in life without wine, right? Pretty much from cradle to grave, there's wine. A bris, you have a kosher bracha. Right? Shabbos Yom Tov, kosher bracha. Chasana, kosher bracha. In fact, again, the Gemara Maseches Moed Katan says, they used to have a practice called the Kol Shel Tanchumen, a cup of consolation. That when the Avelim would come back from the cemetery, they would give them a big glass of wine. Now, again, this practice really fell out of practice for whatever the reason. We don't have that. But again, from cradle to grave, wine was part of every single life cycle event. There's nothing pretty much we do of significance without wine. A Shabbos, a Yom Tov, everything. So just when the grape thought that it was done, it burst. There was so much pressure upon the grape that the grape burst to the point that it no longer retained its initial form. It became something even better than it could have even imagined. Says Rav Hirsch, what a metaphor for life. Because sometimes I'm also just minding my own business on my vine of life. Something happens, I'm plucked off the vine and I'm put into different circumstances. Okay, I could adapt to this. Then what happens? The pressure starts. Life becomes difficult. And sometimes I feel like my circumstances are so overwhelming that I am about to burst. And sometimes I even do burst. Sometimes the pressure is so much. But says Rav Hirsch, understand, suffering is only there to make you the best version of yourself. Adversity is only there because the reality is most of us don't move forward unless we are acted upon. Remember again, it's very simple. Matter remains at rest until it is acted upon. People are innately and inherently lazy. Not because we don't care, not because we're apathetic, but because we're matter. We're matter. And matter, mass, does not move until there is a force that pushes it. There are a couple of people who are self-starters, a couple of people who are a little bit able to self-motivate, but most people will get by with the least amount of effort possible. And most people will not make change unless they are forced to make change. And most people will not accomplish until they are forced to move forward in life, like the grape. The grape doesn't turn, you know, no grape decides, you know what, hey, you know what, I'm tired of being a grape. I'd like to become, you know, a boutique wine. I'd like to become a boutique wine, right? No grape decides, enough of being a grape, I'd like to become a bottle of Malaga. I mean, nobody wants to be a bottle of Malaga, right? But at the end of the day, no grape has this epiphany. When does the grape become wine? When someone puts it in the grape and crushes it. When do we change? When do we move forward? When do we become the best version of ourselves? When we are squeezed under the press of life as well. It is only when there is pressure. It is only when there is difficulty. It is only when there is adversity that we are forced to rise to the occasion. That we are forced to turn our grapes into sweet wine. Says Rav Hirsch, that's the meaning of the pasuk. Lam natzeach. Alagitis mizmor leDavid. David says to the Levitic choir, I want you to sing about this. I want you to tell everybody about this. Because everyone thinks that suffering and adversity, and when I say suffering, by the way, I mean that in a very global sense. Adversity. People think that adversity is bad. People think that turbulence is bad. We spoke about this before. You know, the worst thing is that people have this mindset that life is supposed to be easy. That somehow life is supposed to be smooth sailing. And when difficulty comes along, it like throws us for such a loop. I don't understand. Life was supposed to be easy. Again, if you learned one thing from entire Sefer Tehillim is that life is not supposed to be easy. Just the opposite. Life is supposed to be filled with challenge, difficulty, and adversity? Are there periods of calm? Are there periods, of course, of unabated simcha? 1,000%. But life is about the adversity. Life is about the press. That's David HaMelech. L'matzeach alagit is mizmor leDavid. Life is about the gat. Life is about the wine press. Because it's the press. It's when you're squeezed. It's when ultimately you encounter difficulty and adversity that your koach comes out, that your true nature comes out, that you discover the abilities that you never knew you had. We know this from ourselves, right? No one, you know, it's amazing. No one ever goes on vacation and comes back and says, you know, I discovered that I have all these kochos. It's incredible. I was sitting on the beach for 2 weeks and I discovered all of these things about myself. No one ever says it. People say, I came back from the beach for 2 weeks and I'm more relaxed. Fantastic. I worked on my tan. Incredible. I reconnected with my spouse, with my family, 100%. But no one ever learns new things about themselves on vacation. I'm telling you, this is mamish emes lamito. No one ever says, I had such an epiphany. I never knew I could do this, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. And it was amazing. I was sitting in a chair, eating and drinking for 3 weeks, and I discovered all of these things about myself. But, tell you something amazing. People go through adversity, and people go through challenge, and people go through trauma, and they discover dramatically new things about themselves. Because no one ever discovers their kochos in a state of relaxation. You discover your kochos when you're in the wine press. You discover the kochos when that wheel is turning and you feel like you're being crushed and you feel overwhelmed and you feel the difficulties. None of us want those situations. Of course, we're normal people. Normal people don't want adversity. Normal people don't want challenge. Normal people don't want to feel like they're being squeezed under the wine press of life. But the reality is we all must endure it. We all must live through it in different ways. And those are dafka the times when the most beautiful aspects of our persona come out. When we discover the things about ourselves that we never knew. When we discover the kochos, the abilities we never thought we had. La natseach, conductor of the Levitic choir. I want you to sing alagitis mizmor leDavid. Sing the song about the wine press. Because as strange as it sounds, there is no greater gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us than being pressed under the wine press of life. Because it is only then and there that we discover who we are, what we are, and the real kochos we possess. To take this a little bit further, I want to show you something actually amazing that comes out of this week's parasha. If you take a look at number 7 on your sheet, just to kind of go on this same theme. So this week is Parsha Shlach, at least here in Chutz La'aretz, right? So in Parsha Shlach, so the Torah discusses the Meraglim, the spies. Moshe Rabbeinu sends 12 spies, one spy from each tribe, to go ahead and scout out the land. Now, of course, initially, this was supposed to be a simple reconnaissance mission. Go and see the land, go and see how to conquer it, come back, report, tell us not whether or not we should go in, but how to go in. So the pasuk says in number 7, Eilish Mos Hanoshim Shalach Moshe Lasor Asaretz. Remember again, the Torah tells us the names of all the spies. Vayikra Moshe Lahoshea Benun Yehoshua. And Moshe Rabbeinu goes ahead and changes Hoshea's name to Yehoshua. Okay, interesting fact. So why does he go ahead and change his name? So this, of course, is subject to a whole variety of opinions. Actually, the most commonly well-known idea, which actually I didn't put on the sheet, is Rashi. Rashi says that the Yud that Moshe Rabbeinu adds was the Yud, of course, represents the name of God, the name of Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Ka Yoshiacha Me'atzos Miraglim. May Hashem save you, Yehoshua, from the council of the spies. So there are many problems with this approach of Rashi. So first of all, again, Moshe, if you know that the sin of the spy, that the spies, their report is going to be so disastrous, then what? Don't send them in the first place, right? What's going on over here? If you think Yehoshua needs extra help, so what's going on over here? So the Mefarshim give a whole variety of different opinions, right? So again, we're not going to go through all of this now, But the Mefarshim, others say Moshe really changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua much earlier on. But rather the Torah is recording it here. But if you skip down to number 11 on your sheet, the Medrash I just quoted to you says, Lo Hoshea ben Yehoshua, Melamed, Shenispalo alav Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe davened for Yehoshua. V'hosif lo os achas mishmom shalakadish baruch hu. And Moshe Rabbeinu added on one letter to the name of Hoshea. V'amar ka Yoshiacha me'atsas miraglim. May God save you from the council of the spies. So ultimately, now again, the simple understanding could be that Moshe Rabbeinu understood everything that could potentially go wrong with this mission of the spies. Could possible. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu was just giving Yoshua, who was his most devoted disciple, an extra measure of divine protection, divine strength, divine providence. Why wouldn't Moshe just give this to all the spies? Okay, it's a good kasha. The Gemara, the Yerushalmi number 12, says something amazing. The Yerushalmi writes, listen to this. Rabbi Huna b'shem Rabbi Achai, Yud shenot la kodesh baruch hu me'imenu sara, olo yud v'nishtateach lifnei kodesh baruch hu. V'omar, ribon ha'olamet, akartani min atzadeik hasazos. So listen to this. The Yerushalmi records a story. We know that earlier on, already in Bereshis, so our first matriarch began with the name of Sarai. Sarai, her name was then changed to Sarah. Sarah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu removed the Yud from Sarai and replaced it with a Hey. The Gemara says, the Yerushalmi says, the Yud was very perturbed, very distressed. So the Yud comes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Yud says, Ribono Shel Olam, you took me away from the tzaddik, you took me away from Sarai. What are you going to do with me now? I'm a Yud without a home, a Yud without a country, right? So a Yud without a name. So what should I do now? Where should I go? Amar la Kodesh Baruch Hu, tzei lecha, l'sha'avar hayisa besof teva, chayecha sh'ani nosancha b'rosh teva. So God tells the Yud, don't be upset. With Sarai, you are at the end of her name. I'm going to find you another home. I'm going to find you another name. And not only that, I'm going to put you at the beginning of the name. So an amazing statement from the Jerusalem Talmud. Where does the Yud of Yehoshua come from? The Yud of Yehoshua comes from Sarai. Sarai lost her Yud, right? Her Yud becomes a Hey. Sarai becomes Sarah. The Yud of Sarai is distressed. How could it be HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I'm not going to have a place, I'm not going to have a name to attach myself to? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ta'ir Yud, don't fret. I will find you a name. I will find you a home. Not only that, by Sarai, you at the end of her name, I'm going to find you another name. You're going to be at the beginning of the name. Whose name does the Yud of Sarai attach itself to? None other than Hoshea, who becomes Yehoshua. The Yud of Yehoshua comes from Sarai. A beautiful Gemara asks Rev Saratskin, tells Rashi Shiva in number 13, what's the connection? It's a beautiful Gemara. I'm sure many of you are familiar with this Gemara. But what's the connection that the Yud of Sarai ultimately comes to Hoshea? Right? Is this like a cute thing? The Yud go from here to over here? Obviously must be something deeper. So the Hazayim Torah of Suraskin writes something so beautiful. Number 13. He says, Lo Hoshea ben Yehoshua, Chazal Darshu, Sheyud, number 13, right-hand column, Sheyud Shenot LaKadosh Baruch Hu Misarai, Sheshina Eshma L'Sara, Amad V'Tzavach Kama Shanim, Ad Sheba Yehoshua, V'Hosif LaKadosh Baruch Hu Esayud Hazos L'Shmo. So again, Rav Suraskin quotes the Yerushalmi that says, the Yud was crying out for a number of years. The Yud couldn't understand why it was so forsaken, so forlorn. It had such a nice home, right? With Sarai Imenu. And now what happens is remove some Sarai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry. I'm going to give you another home, Yehoshua. B'tzarchiyin. Lama bachru b'hoshea binun, b'hosif lo ayud, shegaro misarai. So as of Saratskin, I don't understand. What's the connection? Why is it that the Yud of Sarai ultimately, again, is given to Hoshea, who becomes Yehoshua? So he gives a beautiful answer. Yesh lomar, She'ayidei sheshinu es shema, left hand paragraph. Es shema misarai l'sara, nolad lo yitzchak. So remember again, Sarai, when she becomes Sarah, experienced a fundamental change in destiny. And it was that change in destiny that allowed her to bear a son. Sarai could not have a son. Sarah could have a son. Sarai had no offspring. Sarah has a Yitzchak. Va'adya chafetzash aya. She'yirshes kol aretz Yisrael k'mo she'amar li'avram. Ki lo yirash ben ha'mazos em b'ni im Yitzchak. I'm going to read one more line. U'miloi chafetzazen nimsar li'oshua. She'hinchil es ha'aretz li'Yisrael. U'lefichach. Magia lo b'tzedek hayod shenilkacha misai. So it was time to write something so beautiful. Remember again the episode. Now remember when Sarai has Yitzchak. So Avram Avinu has two sons, a Yishmael and a Yitzchak. So the Torah records a very dramatic episode where Sarai says to Avram, "Ki lo yirash b'niim ben amazos. My son cannot inherit together with the son of the maidservant." Sarai Iminu says to Avraham, "My son is your spiritual heir. I know you have two sons. I know you have two biological sons. But our son Yitzchak, is your spiritual heir." Which means that it is Yitzchak who is going to go ahead and number one, inherit the spiritual legacy, but also inherit the title to the land of Israel. You see, what Sarah Imenu was saying when she said to Avram, "Ki lo yirash b'niim ben ha'ama azos," that there's no shared spiritual inheritance. Remember again, until Yaakov Avinu, the way the Abrahamic legacy is transmitted is from father to son, father to son. Yaakov was the first one who transmitted the legacy to all 12 sons. So Sarah says to Avraham, ultimately again, your legacy is going to only be transmitted to one son, and it's my son, it's Yitzchak. Eretz Yisrael belongs to Yitzchak and ultimately his descendants. Says Rav Sirotkin so beautifully, who is going to be the leader who allows Am Yisrael to inherit Eretz Yisrael? It's not Moshe. Remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu dies in the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu never sets foot in his beloved land of Israel. He looked at it, he saw it, but he never stepped foot in it. Who is the one, who is the leader who brings Am Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael to inherit, to conquer, to divide up the land? It's Yehoshua. So therefore, again, the Yud of Sarai goes to Hoshea. The Yud, remember again, when Sarai loses that Yud, she becomes Sarah. Sarah has a Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the spiritual heir of Avraham Avinu, which is a spiritual legacy and also a geographic legacy of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Yud of Sarai goes to the man who will be the one who will help Am Yisrael inherit Eretz Yisrael. That's why it says Rav Saratskin, the Yud of Sarai goes to Hoshea to make him Yosho, because there is a connection between these two. Sarai Imena was the one who told her husband, "You have one spiritual heir, and that's Yitzchak. Eretz Yisrael is Yitzchak's, Torah is Yitzchak's, your Ruchnius is Yitzchak." And it is Hoshea, when he becomes Yehoshua, who becomes the leader, who allows that promise. Remember again, think about this just a moment. Kadosh Baruch Hu promises Avraham Avinu that the land of Israel is going to belong to his children. Who is the leader who helped to bring that promise to fruition? It wasn't Moshe. It was Yehoshua. And therefore the Yud of Sarai ultimately again goes to Hoshea. That's the approach of Rav Sirotkin, a very beautiful and incredible approach. But I think we could take this one step further, because there's another incredible connection between Sarai and Yehoshua. What's the connection? Take a look at number 14. So remember again, this is the series of Psukim, going back a little bit in the story. V'sarai eishes Avram lo yolda, lo, v'lo shif chamitzus shma hagar. So the Torah tells a story. Sarai Imenu can't have children. She can't have children. And again, Avram and Sarai have been married for a while, and she realizes that she is not producing children. But she has a maidservant. So she comes to Avraham Avinu with an idea. Vatomer Sarai el Avram, Hineina Aratzarani Hashem Iledes. Kadosh Baruch Hu has withheld from me the ability to give birth. Bona Shevchasi, Ulai Ibonem Imena, Vayishma Avram Nikol Sarai. So Sarai advances the idea. She says to Avram, "I have a maidservant. marry my maidservant, have children with my maidservant, and because she's my maidservant, the children that she has, it's like it's from me. We see this. This, by the way, is the same model that we see a little bit later on by Rachel and Leah as well. Vatikach Sarai Eches Avram Es Hagar Hamitzur Shivchasa Miketz Eser Shonam Neshavas Avram Be'eretz Kenan Vatitin Osali Avram Isha Lo Leisha. And again, so what happens after 10 years since they've been sojourning in the desert, and Avram and Sarai have no children? Sarai takes her maidservant, gives the maidservant to Avram as a wife, and Avram takes her as a wife. Says the Ramban in number 15. Understand what happened over here. Says the Ramban number 15, 15 Aleph. Vayishma Avram lekol Sarai. Avram listened to Sarai. Lo amar akasa vayaskein. Ela amar ki shama lekol Sarai. Yirmos. Ki afa pisha Avram misavim ma'od labanim. Lo asa king below rishos Sarai. So this is incredible. This idea for the maidservant did not come from Avram. It came from Sarai. The Ramban goes on to explain something dramatically amazing. This whole idea of having a child with Hagar was not Avram's idea. Why? Because from Avram's perspective, Avram had Sarai. And that was enough for Avram. It's amazing. That was enough for Avram. If it wasn't going to produce children, the union wasn't going to produce children. It never dawned on Avram to have a child with Hagar. This was Sarai's idea. Not only that, but Ramban goes on. And Ramban says that it is Sarai who actively brings Hagar to Avram. Not only that, but remember again, in biblical relationships, there are two different models. There's what's called the Pilegesh, which is a concubine, and there is an Isha, a wife. So again, they're both marital unions. But a Pilegesh, a concubine, is not a full-fledged wife. So Avram's thought was that he would take Hagar as a Pilegesh. And writes the Ramban, Sarai says, no, you're not going to take her as a concubine. Rather, you're going to take her as a wife. What's happening over here? So the Ramban says something dramatically amazing. You see, Sarai understood that she and Avram had a destiny. Their destiny was to build a people. So when they first heard about this destiny, Sarai assumed that how is it going to unfold? She and Avram would have a child. 10 years have gone by. They've been in Canaan for 10 years. No child. So she realizes at this moment that she has a choice. Either give up on the destiny, or find a different way to bring it about. So she goes to Avram, she says, my beloved Avram, I always thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us our offspring, our family, with me and you. It appears to me now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a different plan, and that perhaps, again, our destiny, our future, is to be built up through Hagar. Avram Avinu was resistant. Sarai Imenu presses. She says, listen, sometimes your destiny doesn't come about in the easiest of ways. And sometimes your destiny doesn't materialize even in the most pleasant of ways. But you can't give up on the dream. You can't give up on the destiny. Sometimes when life throws up roadblocks, you just need to find a way to navigate around it. So Avram says, fine. I'll take her as a Pilegesh. I'll take her as a concubine. To which the pasuk says, "Vatitin osli Avram isha lo li isha." To which Sarai says to Avram, "No, you're not going to take her as a concubine. If we're going to do this, we're going to do this correctly. You're going to marry her. Hagar is going to be a full-fledged wife, and you're going to bring a child into this world who's going to be your spiritual heir in the right way, not out of a second-tier type of relationship, but out of a first." Tier type of relationship, says the Ramban. Do you understand what's unfolding over here? Sarai Imenu was so dedicated to this vision, to this goal, to this destiny about bringing about an Abrahamic family that even when it became exceptionally difficult, she would not jump ship. she would not give up. In other words, would any of us have faulted Sarah if she would have said, listen, we tried. Remember again, having children is the one thing, one of the things that is totally up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the Mafteach Shel Chaya, it's the key of life. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why even the mitzvah of pure river, the mitzvah of procreation, is a mitzvah to try to have a family. That's the mitzvah that human beings are given. You have to try to have a family. Whether, again, you do or you don't, that's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So would any of us have faulted Sarah Imenu, had she said, you know what, we tried. Over 10 years we tried. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has other plans for us. No. Let's enjoy our union together. But obviously a family is not meant to be. But Sarai realized that she and Avram had a higher calling. And that higher calling did not allow them the luxury of abandoning the dream, even when it became difficult. So she comes to Avram Avinu with an alternate plan. And the alternate plan involves taking Hagar as a wife. Avram's reaction to that, no thank you. Hagar is not my wife. Hagar is your servant. Sarai, I'm happy with you. And if it's a union that doesn't yield children, if we don't have family, if all we have is each other, I'm content with that. To which Sarai says, but I'm not. There's a vision. Remember what God told you? God told you you're going to be a father of a multitude of nations. God told you you're going to shape the world. God told you you're going to have offspring that are like the stars of the sky and the sand on the earth. We have to bring it about. And if it can't come about in the way we had planned, then life is all about having your plan B in order to allow your destiny to materialize. Sarai was so dedicated to a vision, to a goal, to a destiny, that she would not let anything derail it. So perhaps what's happening over here is as follows. So remember again, the Yerushalmi said that what? The Yerushalmi said that where does the Yud of Yehoshua come from? The Yud of Yehoshua comes from Sarai. What's the connection between Hoshea and Sarai? Moshe Rabbeinu pulls Yehoshua to Hoshea to the side and says, Hoshea, I just want to tell you, you're about to lead the reconnaissance mission into Eretz Yisrael. And I want to be clear. Eretz Yisrael is beautiful. Eretz Yisrael is magnificent. There is no better land on the face of the earth. But it is not going to be easy. It's going to be filled with difficulties. It's going to be filled with challenges. And I have a dark suspicion that the Meraglim, the other spies, are going to see the difficulties and they're going to say no thank you. Because that's what most people do when they see difficulties. They simply run in the other direction. Most of us don't like hurdles. Most of us don't like obstacles. And when we see them, we don't even try to scale over them. We don't even try to jump over them. We just simply go back to what we know. We just simply revert back to the comforts of mediocrity. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? He says, Hoshea, I'm going to give you a gift. What's the greatest gift that Moshe Rabbeinu could give the Rebbe, could give his Talmud? I'm going to give you a Yud. I'm going to give you the Yud of Sarai. I'm going to give you the gift of perseverance. Because Sarai was a woman who was so dedicated to a vision, to a destiny, to a dream, that even when it could not materialize in conventional normative means, she did not jump ship. She did not turn around. She did not run. She said to Avram, we need to figure out a path forward. It's not the path we planned. It's not the path we dreamed. It's not the path we had in mind. Okay, life is all about rerouting. Rerouting, right? Again, who amongst us goes anywhere today without Waze? Baruch Hashem for Waze. And what's the best part of Waze? The best part is that when you're stuck in a traffic jam, Waze doesn't say, Zeitgeist, right? That's it. Waze doesn't say, oh, I'm sorry. Right? Get comfortable. It's going to be a while. Right? What does Waze do for you? Rerouting. Gewaldig. It's incredible. Right? If only we were Waze. Because so many times in life, what happens is you get stuck. Okay. Close my eyes. Relax. Going nowhere fast. Sarai Imenu was the first Waze. Right? Lahavdil. Right? Sarai Imenu was the first one that when she hit an impasse said, I'm not staying here. This is not the end of the road for me. I must find a different way. The different way is so crazy. The different way is Hagar. And remember again, she comes to Avram and she says, Avram, there's a different way to the destiny, Hagar. What does Avram say? No. Avram's first reaction is, no, I'm not interested in Hagar. I want you. I'm not interested in this alternate plan. If we can't have children together, that's it. And Sarah says, no, there's a destiny. There's a dream. There's something bigger. Rerouting, rerouting, rerouting. This path didn't work. We have to find a different way. So the Meraglim are about to go into Eretz. So Moshe Rabbeinu knows. It's not that Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Meraglim were going to say a bad report. Moshe Rabbeinu knew human nature. What's human nature? Human nature is everybody loves to dream. Everybody loves dreams. Everybody loves dreams. Do you know when dreams fall apart? When people realize they have to work. Everybody loves dreams, goals, aspirations, 5-year plans, 10-year plans, 20-year plans, 2-hour plans. Everybody loves them. Until you hit a brick wall and suddenly say, oh, okay, I tried. Throw the hands up in the air and revert back mediocrity. Remember again, what does Klal Yisrael say? Fast forward a little bit. When the Meraglim come back, right? The Meraglim come back and they go ahead and they deliver their disastrous report. What do the Meraglim say? Vayomru ish al achiv nitna rosh v'nashuva mitzrayma. Do you know what the Meraglim say? The Am Yisrael says, let's go back to Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt. Again, so understand, the Meraglim come back and they give their disastrous report. Okay, Eretz Yisrael is not good. Eretz Yisrael is not good. So what do the people say? Let's go back to Egypt. Why would you ever want to go back to Egypt? Meaning, I understand if you say, let's just stay in the desert. By the way, the desert, you know, we think Klal Yisrael was in the desert for 40 years, Nebuch. By the way, it was a 5-star desert experience, right? It was like a destination. It's like a Pesach program for 40 years, but without all the calories. Right? So remember again, you've got free dry cleaning, you've got meals. All right, there probably wasn't a tea room. Chash Baruch Hu was teaching us, no one needs tea rooms, by the way, least of all the Jewish people. No one needs tea rooms, but that's a different discussion. In any event, for 40 years, Chash Baruch Hu is taking care of all of us in totality. We're fine. So you want to tell me, I don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, I'll stay in the desert. Okay, I could have heard that. But let's go back to Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt. Do you know what they did to us in Egypt? They threw our babies into the Niles. Right into the Nile. They afflicted us. They beat us. They killed us. Why does anyone want to go back to Egypt? Because this is human nature. Human nature is that when you run into adversity, you slip back into mediocrity. When I run into adversity, when I hit a brick wall or I hit an obstacle, let me just go back to what I know. But what you know is bad. What you know is not good. What you know is terrible. What you know is mediocre. I know, but I know it. So when faced with the uncertainty of Eretz Yisrael and the known of Egypt, in Eretz Yisrael you can become a free people. In Eretz Yisrael you can become a chosen nation. In Eretz Yisrael you can actualize your destiny. I know, but there's nations, there's wars, there's this, there's that. There's giants, there's big grapes, there's all the stuff. Everything else. Egypt, I know. They're throwing the baby into the Nile. All this stuff, but I know it. So Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Yehoshua, I just want to tell you, I hope this mission is going to go well, but human nature is human nature. And when people encounter adversity, they simply revert back to what they know, no matter how bad it may be. So Hoshea, I want to give you a gift. I want to give you the Yud of Sarai. I want to give you the courage to maintain allegiance and fidelity to a vision and to destiny, no matter how difficult it becomes. No matter how overwhelming, and even when you hit a brick wall, if the destiny is important enough, rerouting, you find a way around it. You find another way to get there. Moshe Rabbeinu gives Hoshea, not just the Yud representing the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Yud of Sarai. Because who was Sarai? Sarai was a woman who had a dream. And she did not allow adversity, difficulty, or challenge to get in the way of that dream because she understood she had a destiny. And destiny never materializes easily. Destiny never shows up and nestles itself at your feet. Destiny never shows up and says, ta-da, I'm here. Hi, it's destiny. Would you mind inviting me in? I'd be happy to unfold right in front of you and make everything happen. That's never how destiny happens. Destiny always comes with heartbreak, with difficulty, with challenge, and with a ton of rerouting. The first person to ever teach us this was Sara Imenu. And that yud of Sara, that courage of Sara, becomes the guiding light for Hosea. And I'll tell you something even more amazing. I didn't put this on the sheet, but you know, I'm thinking of it as we're saying it. Do you know one of the things that the Torah keeps on mentioning, the thing mentioned most during the journey of the spies, you'll take a wild guess, the thing mentioned most during the journey of the spies was grapes. Grapes. Torah speaks about again how they took a cluster of grapes. Torah speaks about how they named one of the places Nachal Eshkol, the grape fixation. Grape fixation. Why the grape fixation? Because grapes are the great metaphor for life. A grape is beautiful, but it really, you really unlock the true beauty of the grape when you crush it, when you put it under the press. The grape is beautiful. It's succulent. It's delicious. It's fantastic. But it's only when you press it that you get the most beautiful byproduct of the wine. You see, the Meraglim missed out on the entire message. They saw adversity. All they saw was big grapes. All they saw was difficulty. But they didn't realize that all you need to do is to find a different way around, to be a Sarai, to weather through the adversity, and you'll be able to actualize your identity, your destiny, and your mission. And perhaps to loop this all the way back, that's what David HaMelech was saying. Lam natzeach al hagitis. So perhaps what David HaMelech was saying in this opening pasuk was as follows. Levitic choir. What I want you to sing about is al hagitis. I want you to sing about adversity in life. I want you to sing about the press. I want you to sing about the challenges. And I want you to remind people. See, people think that when you feel crushed under the adversity, under the weight of life, that that's the end of the road. But it's not true. Mizmor LeDavid. Right? Look back just for one moment at that first source once more. Lam Natzeach, this is the message, the eternal message of David HaMelech, conductor of the Levitic choir. I want you to sing about the Gittis. I want you to sing about the press. What about the press? I want you to tell people that life is filled with challenges, and life is filled with adversity, and life is filled with difficulties. But understand, it's not, see, people think that when you're under the press of life, when you encounter challenges, that you've done something wrong, you made a wrong turn. It's not true. The press is there to bring out the true inner beauty. The press is there, like Rav Hirsch said, to squeeze the wine out of the grapes. It's in the press that you discover who you are. Do you know why Sarai becomes Sarah? Only because she gave Hagar to Avram. Only because when she hits a brick wall, rerouting, she finds a way around. Do you know why Yehoshua or Hoshea becomes a Yehoshua? Because he was unwilling to go with the disastrous report to the spies. But he said, whatever we need to do, we will figure this out. Tell the people Alagitis, and tell the people that even after they get to the press, Mizmor LeDavid. Because the true singing in life comes when you get to the press, you feel squeezed by the circumstances in life, you don't give up, you realize how much strength you really have, how much koach you really have, how many different diverse abilities you really possess. Sometimes you only start singing in life after your grapes have been pressed and the beautiful, delicious wine has been made. You only become a Sarah after you've been a Sarai. And you only become a Yehoshua after you've been a Hoshea. All of us go through the press of life in different ways, right? And again, that press, right? We all are pressed in different ways. Some of us are pressed with significant life challenges. Some of us are pressed, the whole issue with challenges in life, and challenges are subjective. Right? Do you ever have a situation in life where you're struggling with something and you say it over to someone and they say, well, you know, there are children starving in Africa. And I say, okay, thanks. That's very helpful, right? In fact, no one ever says, oh, there are children starving in Africa. You know what? That's an excellent point. My problems are not so big. Instead, usually we become pretty resentful of people who say that to us, because essentially what they're doing is they're poo-pooing our challenges. Now, while it's true, I understand my challenge may not be the biggest challenge in the world, but it's my challenge. And it's here right now, and for me, it feels pretty big. So we all have our challenges, whether they're objectively big or small. Our challenges are our challenges. We all have those moments where I feel like the grape under the press, and I feel that the wheel is turning. I feel that the wheel is turning. But you see, unlike grapes, sometimes you have a choice. See, the grape doesn't have a choice. Once it's under the press, that's it. It's a goner. It's going to become wine. I have a choice. When I'm under that press, I have a choice. I can go back to Egypt. I can go back to Egypt. I can say, you know what? I hate the brick wall. Life is a bit too challenging. Let me pull back a little bit. And let me just go back to what I know. It's Egypt. It's terrible. I know it's terrible, but it's what I know. Or I can bend my shoulder. I can weather the challenges. I can realize that if I'm hitting a brick wall, it's just because I need to find another way around. I could not give up on my dreams. I could persevere with my destiny. I could be a Sarai, and I could recognize that what's going to come out from the press is not my obliteration and destruction, but it's going to be the beautiful wine of my kohos, the beautiful wine of my abilities, the beautiful wine of the things that I knew I never even knew I possessed. And the truth is, David HaMelech teaches us, the real singing of life occurs when you come out of the press. The real singing of life, the Mizmor LeDavid, is after Al Hagitis. It's only after you go through the press of life, only after you go through the challenges and you don't give up, only after you're a Sarai, only after you're a Yehoshua, when you realize that the challenges didn't crush you, the challenges didn't break you, the challenges didn't obliterate you, but in fact, the challenges, now I want to be clear, the challenges leave their scars, and the challenges leave their wounds, and sometimes those wounds never heal. But the challenges allow me to understand things about myself that I would have never discovered had I not been crushed underneath the press. And when I begin to discover all of those things inside of me, that's when I truly begin to sing. Because it's only after you go through the press of life that you realize who you are. It's only after that you're under the Gittis that you could be Mizmor LeDavid, that you could sing the songs of life. This was David HaMelech's life. He understood it. I only became who I became, says David, because I spent a lot of my life underneath the press. And what's true for David is true for all of us as well. So, as we leave off Sefer Tehillim with this incredible life message, that life is filled with incredible opportunity, incredible destiny, incredible dreams and visions. But almost every single actualization of destiny, number one, always hits us up against brick walls. And then when you hit that brick wall, you have a choice. You can go back to your Egypt of mediocrity, or you could be a Sarai and find your way around. You could be a Yehoshua and find your way around to the materialization of your destiny, of your dreams. But recognize that so much of life is spent underneath the press. So much of life is filled with pressure, filled with difficulty, filled with adversity. And that's not because you made wrong turns, and it's not because you've done bad things, but that's because that's the nature of life. Because like it or not, our greatest kohos only come out not on the beach chair on vacation, but our greatest kohos only come out when we are faced with the press, when we are faced with the adversity and the difficulties of life. And if we're willing to be strong and not give up and weather those storms as we go through the presses and pressures of life, the beautiful wine of potential will seep out. The beautiful kohos we never knew we had will become apparent. And we will see that we will have the ability to sing in the press and when we come out of the press. That was the great koach of David HaMelech, and halavai we should be zocha that through learning his beautiful words, we should be privileged to find this same strength for ourselves, this same strength in life, and be able to sing in the press be able to sing as we come out of the press, discover the incredible abilities we each possess, and in Mirat Hashem, like Sarah and like Yoshua, find the koach and the staying power to see the actualization of our destiny and of our dreams. Stop over here for today. I thank all of you for another wonderful semester again. I'm sorry, once again, we did not finish Sefer Tehillim, but I think over the course of a year, I think we maybe got through 4 chapters, which is excellent. We're making very good time. I think by the time I retire when I'm 80, I think we'll be finished Emirat Hashem with Sefer Tehillim. But Emirat Hashem Baruch Hu should just give us the koach to continue to learn together, grow together, and internalize the beautiful and holy words of Dara HaMelech for many years to come. Wishing all of you a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and a beautiful and restful summer.
Thank you, Rabbi.